Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge like John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
So the theory goes that back in the days, in the 1920s, 1930s, 1950s, 1960s even, that the media was so chummy with the players that they covered that a lot of the warts, a lot of the ugliness that was around players of those eras wasn't reported. It, you know, we find out later that Mickey Mantle was a drunk. We find out later that, you know, Babe Ruth was a womanizer. We find out later a lot of things about players that we didn't know. We're in an era now where we seemingly know everything about these players, or at least what we can see on social media, what we can see on video, and what we can gather from watching with our own eyes. Plus, you've got media that are more willing to report, in some cases, about the ugliness that goes on behind the locker room door. The Cleveland Cavaliers are a mess. You've got dysfunction. You've got infighting. You've got an organization that is seemingly headed to implode. And I think it's kind of good for sports in a way because it is emblematic of the super team, LeBron going back to Cleveland. Even though they won a championship, they look like they are ready to implode in a way that is not going to be pretty. This happens in locker rooms, and it even happened with the Patriots during their playoff run. We heard all this talk about, was it real that there's a rift between Robert Kraft and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, Jimmy Garoppolo being jettisoned to San Francisco? Was that a real thing? And we talk about it more. And I'm wondering if infighting and locker room problems and chemistry problems have always been there, and we just don't see it back in even 1980s, 1990s, early 2000s, or if it's more prevalent now because we're in a culture in sports where it is me, Inc. It's LeBron. It's super teams. It's Brady. And Brady's brand and LeBron's brand, bigger than the Patriots? You could argue Brady's bigger than the Patriots. You could argue certainly LeBron is bigger than the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think that that is where sports has gone. I'm not sure it's all great, all of it's positive, but I'm wondering, too, if, you know, you've got LeBron James who says, I'm not waiving my no-trade clause. I'm not setting up Cleveland for their future. I'm going to play this thing out and look at my own options.
Listen, I'm here for the long haul. You know, I'm here for this season right now to try to figure out ways we can still compete. I couldn't give up on my teammates like that. I couldn't do that. That's I just couldn't do it. We put too much into the game, you know, every single day. We go out and prepare, even though win, lose, or draw. At the end of the day, we are brothers, and we understand that. So, you know, I owe it to my teammates to finish the season out, no matter how it ends up. So I would never waive my no-trade clause.
We've got a national signing day going on. I drove in front of a high school today, one of the area power high schools. And I saw kids out front with balloons posing for photographs and parents with their College Choice sweatshirts on. And that's all cool. But I wondered as I drove by it and you hear Cleveland and you think about Brady and you think about some of the things we've seen across sports in the last few years. And I wonder, like, is it more important than ever for these college coaches who are attracting talented high school players to their programs? Is it not more important than ever that you're bringing in your kind of people? We're going to talk about that on today's show. The Oregon Ducks kind of people. Who is that exactly? We'll talk to Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, who covers the Oregon Ducks football program. We'll talk to Matt Prem of 24/7 Sports, who covers recruiting. What's exactly an Oregon kid? Because I think you could go back to the Mike Bellotti Oregon kid, and you saw some overachievers. You saw T.J. Ward. You saw guys who came into the program and have had nice NFL careers that maybe weren't expected. Walk-on, a preferred walk-on, ends up playing in the NFL for a long time. I think you go to the Chip Kelly era, and you see more of the system player. And you see Chip Kelly playing for a national championship against Auburn, without a single player in the draft that followed that, drafted in the first round by an NFL team. System guys. And you see Chip Kelly today on National Signing Day at UCLA doing some things that are a little bit outside the box. Some system guys. Who's the Oregon State kid? Has the identity of the Oregon State kid changed at all? Is he still blue collar, or is that just something we like to say? Is he still hard-nosed? Is he still... a Scrabble kid, tough Scrabble kid. Is it a lunch pail mentality? Linebacker U? Or what is the Oregon State kid under Jonathan Smith? We're going to talk about all of that on today's show, and Jonathan Smith will join us as well to talk about it. But I want to start today by talking about those interpersonal relationships in the locker room. We all deal with people who are difficult. We all deal with people who are not on the same page. Me, for example, I hate meetings. You know why I hate meetings? I think meetings are a monumental waste of time. The first reason that meetings are a monumental waste of time is that people like to schedule meetings in the morning. It's when you're most productive. You're supposed to be doing your primary thinking, your primary duty, the things that you absolutely have to get done should all be things you do before 3 o'clock. Really should. Shouldn't be in your leftover time. So people will schedule a meeting right smack dab in the middle of your most productive, when your brain's at its sharpest. It's a ridiculous time to have a meeting in the morning. I also don't like meetings because you know what happens? They say a meeting's at 9:30 or 10. This didn't happen to me today, but it just happens all the time. The meeting will be at 9:30 or 10, and what happens? You show up at 9:30. Let's say the meeting's at 10. You show up at 10. Let's say you show up at 9:58. Some people aren't wandering in there till 10:05. There's a whole bunch of small talk that happens till about 10:12. Then somebody says, well, we might as well get going. And a meeting is held in which ideas are shared and not much comes out of it. And people are all kind of distracted and disjointed and have their own agendas, and they all scatter. I don't want to do any more meetings. I feel like meetings are a monumental waste of time. You also have people in a locker room or in a work setting that you don't probably share, the same sort of process with. And this is where it gets tricky for people who are trying to figure out what's going on in locker rooms and sports. Look around your office. Tell me, if you pick 10 or 12 people, if you could all work together with a singular vision, if you all could get it. You weren't handpicked that way. You were just kind of hired and thrown together, and teams are handpicked. That's what I think makes chemistry so interesting, in the NBA especially. You talk about culture and you talk about chemistry all the time. You hear those things. Culture, chemistry, we've got great culture, we've got championship culture, we've got championship chemistry. We want that DNA. We want the DNA of that. Winning DNA, championship DNA, you hear things like that thrown out all the time. And I wonder if coaches and GMs think they can just say it and make it so. Like LeBron, like talking about, we're all in this together.
Stay positive, keep pushing, try to get better, and that's where it's at. I mean, that's where that for me. You know, we got another opportunity tomorrow, you know, playing against a very good team that beat us up pretty good in Minnesota before, so, you know, we look forward to the challenge. We got to come out with the right game plan, we got to come out with a sense of urgency, we got to play the game the right way and try to sustain some good basketball for 48 minutes.
They lost to a bad team last night. They scored nearly 50 points in the first quarter and lost the game. They had a 20-point lead and lost it by 20. It was a bad loss. In good teams, that doesn't happen to them. Cleveland's in trouble. We saw it a little bit with the Patriots, and that is supposed to be the blueprint for what is winning culture. Tom Brady, Belichick, are they on the same page? And you're wondering now, in the wake of the Super Bowl, was that a distraction? And people are talking about it. And I just wonder if maybe we're more cognizant of it now because of social media, because players seemingly control their own brand. They've got their own platform to send their own message out. It's not like they're sitting quiet in a corner of a locker room relying upon a reporter to tell their story. They can, in their subtle ways, through Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and other platforms, they can tell their own story. I think it's a tricky time, and I think the NBA is going to be an interesting study, because I have to say, you have to give the Warriors tremendous amount of credit for what they have done in keeping the egos together after winning so much. In Cleveland, you saw it with Isaiah Thomas, you saw it with Kyrie Irving, you saw it with LeBron and Kevin Love, and you're watching a collection of players that seemingly should be as good as their parts, right? The sum should be as good as the pieces there. That just isn't. It's underperforming. And they've tried new things. It's still underperforming. And at the end of it, I wonder if LeBron's the problem. He's a tremendous player, tremendous talent. But I just wonder if he's suffering from the same thing that Chip Kelly suffered from in going from college football to the NFL in Philadelphia. Chip Kelly, smarter than anybody, right? Draw up the plays on a napkin. Recruit outside the box. I'm not doing social media. I don't need it. People don't need to know what I had for breakfast. He goes to Philadelphia, and what happens? He has problems in the locker room with players who say, wait a minute, we don't know if this guy, we're not seeing eye to eye. What does he want to control us with? And by the way, what is he doing with the personnel here? He thinks he's smarter than anybody. And in the end, Chip Kelly, the general manager, got Chip Kelly, the coach, fired. And I wonder if LeBron James, the GM, and team president, he's got LeBron James, the superstar, generational MVP talent, Hall of Famer, that guy in trouble. I think we're getting a glimpse into locker rooms like never before. National Signing Day is a great day to start that conversation. I want you to tell me what you think the typical Oregon Ducks player is. When we talk about coaches like today, Mario Cristobal will say, we got guys who fit our culture. Well, who is that anymore? You tell me. 503-417-7575. And Beaver fan, who's an Oregon State kid now under Jonathan Smith? Is it still that lunch bucket kid? That kid who's going to come in and work hard? Who are you and who is your identity? 503-417-7575. You weigh in. You've seen the video of Jacob Copeland, the wide receiver. He is the number 5 wide receiver recruit in the country. He committed to Florida today at his high school at a ceremony, and he had 3 ball caps in front of him on the table. Like, you've seen this scene before on National Signing Day. And Copeland was sitting there, and he was very hopeful, and some of his classmates were there. In fact, the entire school was assembled in an assembly in the gym. And so Copeland's sitting at the table, and this one was televised nationally on ESPN. And Copeland's sitting there, and he's got the 3 hats in front of him, and he's got Florida, and he's got Alabama, and I can't remember the other hat, but Tennessee in front of him. And his mother's next to him, a couple of his siblings, looks like his dad's there. His mom's wearing an Alabama sweatshirt, which to me is kind of sad unless Like, is mom going to Alabama? Did she attend Alabama? I don't know. But the kid picks Florida. And when he announces that he's picking Florida, that's where he wants to go to college, mom gathers her things and leaves the table. Just gets up and leaves. To me, that was gross because it is everything that is wrong with parenting. You're all wrapped up in this being your decision. I got news for you, mom. I don't care if you're disappointed. I don't care if you wanted him at Alabama. I don't care if you had an Alabama sweatshirt. It isn't your life. It isn't your college decision. The kid wants to go to Florida. He picked Florida. I just thought it was disgusting. Like we always tell kids, hey, kid, you got to grow up. I want to turn to Copeland's mom, Jacob Copeland, and I want to go, grow up. It's like, I did something the other day that in our household that I think, I was reading this parenting book. And we've got a teenager, we've got an 11-year-old, we've got a 3-year-old, I need every all the help I can get. So I'm reading this parenting book and it's talking about your grades for your kids. You know, what do, right? Do you offer your kids, hey, for every A you get, some kind of reward? If you get straight A's, do you get a reward? If you get C's or D's, do you get a punishment? Do you get grounded? Do you get something taken away? Do you lose privileges? What do you do as a parent? I don't know what you do in your household, but like we've been all over the map in the last few years. Like sometimes we put the report card up on the refrigerator and taped it there and like this accountability thing that's going to be there. Like when people visit, they always come over and they go, oh, let me read the comments. Other times we have said, look, if you get straight A's, you get a phone. That was talked about at one point, not the 3-year-old. But I was reading this book, and the book said, those are not your grades, like meaning you, the parent. It's not anybody else's grades but the kids. So there has to be this measure of ownership that the kid takes in his or her own future, where the grades are, it's not that you make me proud because you get good grades. Those are your grades. Good for you. So if you get good grades, you're getting good grades because, hey, you value grades. You're putting in the work. You're reaping the benefits of your focus and your determination and your brains in school. But it shouldn't be that parents get wrapped up in the grades like the grades belong to you. Like the grades are a reflection of you. They really aren't. So we had a big discussion prior to this term that is ending right now in schools, in the middle schooler and the high schooler. We said, hey, those are your grades. And we did a chart to sort of, I did a chart with them. I sat down and I said, here's this chart. And I said, what do you think is average? And, the response came, C's are average. Yeah, C's are average. That's an average grade. I guess most of the people would get C's. And then I said, let's make a curve. What's a B? B's good. A's great. D's bad. F's bad, right? That all makes sense. But I said to the kids, I said, where do you think an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer would rate when you looked at their report cards growing up? So if you want to be one of those things, and they all marked the A's and the B's, you want to be one of those things, then you probably need to get A's or B's. And I said, school teacher smart, law enforcement officer smart, nurses smart, all of these achievers get good grades. And on the other end of the spectrum, I said, now, if you wanted to just have a really hard life and not go to college or struggle, or I said, where do you think that person's grades would be? And they all went, oh, yeah, below C's, D's and F's. Yeah. So you decide where you want to be on this chart. Those are your grades. That's your life. And I thought about that when I saw this mom. Jacob Copeland's mom should be ashamed of herself. She shows up to his day on National Signing Day at his ceremony in front of his classmates, and she does something that I think is abusive. I do. I think it's abusive for mom to show up wearing an Alabama shirt when she knows he might be up in the air. I think it's abusive for mom when he picks Florida to rise to her feet like a child and run away from the table. He didn't pick my school. I wanted Alabama. I think it's amplified exponentially that she's doing this in front of a national television audience. And I think even worse than that, she's doing it in front of his classmates and peers. She's saying, my love for you, my acceptance of your decisions in your life are contingent upon you doing what I want you to do, not what you want to do. She's saying, I don't support you unless you pick my way. Parents, hold up a mirror and ask yourself if you're being like Jacob Copeland's mother in any way. Do it on a daily basis. Do it on a weekly basis. I don't care. Just ask yourself, like, if you are disappointed in your child picking a scholarship offer that he has earned to go to Florida, have that discussion with him. Don't show him up in front of his classmates like you're a child. The kid isn't the one who needs to grow up. Ridiculous. By the way, the kid never turned his head. He knew mom wasn't with Florida. Didn't mom know that? Like, if he knew that, was mom not aware of that? Was this a surprise to her? It really makes me wonder. Alan's in Battleground. Alan, what's up, man?
Well, I agree with your final last comment there. He owed it to her to tell her before the press conference. I mean, she's raised this kid from diapers and put her life into this child. He should have told her that before the press conference. Yeah, she didn't act appropriately, but she shouldn't find out when everybody else does.
Yeah, but I also think that if she didn't know what's going on in that household.
Agreed. But he owed her that she needs to go along with his decision. Completely agreed. But she shouldn't have had to find out at the press conference.
Yeah, but I go back to the parent. I want the parent in that situation to be the one who holds the responsibility. She didn't know. If I don't know if something's going on in one of my kids' lives, I don't turn around to my kid and say, that's your fault. I go, what am I doing wrong as a parent? You know? She had on an Alabama sweatshirt and a Tennessee hat. Okay? He picked the Gators. And even if that shocked her, she should have apparently, you know, I know she walked back on. Ralph Russo of the Associated Press said she came back later and gave him a hug. So it tells me that, like, all right, it wasn't like a total meltdown of mom, but the damage she did in that moment, I mean, come on, grow up. John's in Portland calling in. John, what's up?
Hey, man. Yeah, you took a right turn on me with the parental thing, but very dysfunctional of the mom to run off and embarrass the child. And she just embarrassed herself. You know, I like that you relayed that you talk to your kids, right? That's really what it's all about, is being friends with your kids, interested in their lives, giving them the wisdom they need, because you've been there and they haven't. I mean, they're kids, right?
Yeah, and I'm by no means perfect, believe me. Last night, the 15-year-old, she's wearing her Dre Beats headphones at like 1 a.m. listening to music, and I'm like, hey, it's time to go to bed. You're not here to listen to music. Anything else?
Yeah, teenage years are tough, so good luck with that. I'm out. Thanks for that.
All right.
For the line there.
Yeah, she's like, oh, no, I'm just trying to sleep. I'm like, you ain't sleeping with the headphones on. But I was no different. I had the transistor radio under the pillow. I was listening to the Giants post-game show. Supposed to be asleep. I thought about that as I took the headphones from her. Bruce is in Portland. Bruce, what's up?
John, hey, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Great conversation, because I'm going through the exact same thing with my 16-year-old and grades and everything else right now. It's funny you're mentioning all this.
But again,
he's a team sport player, and I just kind of mentioned to him, what are your other teammates getting for grades, blah, 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 and if you want to play at the next level, et cetera, et cetera. But for a parent not to know what their kid's doing in regard to college and scholarship, there's something wrong in the family, completely wrong as far as communication goes. for a parent not to know or for a kid not to tell her, I don't get it. I mean, somebody must have known something. And maybe that was her form of protest. I don't know. But to get that far in life and not know what the heck your kid's doing is inexcusable.
Yeah. And I don't like, look, I can't put it on the 17-year-old kid. I will put it on the mom because, look, even if she's disappointed, her behavior to me is strange. You know, she came back and gave him a hug, right? Okay. But she was clearly not happy. Either that or she's an amazing actor. This is supposed to be one of the happiest moments of his life, and I think she ruined it and took it from him. Leave it here. We're going to talk about the Ducks National Signing Day. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian is next. Matt Prem of 24/7 Sports will be coming up, and Jonathan Smith, Oregon State head coach, will be with us as well. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach, will join us later in the show to tell us, who is the Oregon State kid? Who's that kid anymore? Is it a lunch bucket kid? Jonathan Smith will be with us. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian covers the Oregon Ducks. He's here to speak to the Oregon Ducks National Signing Day. Greif, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What's going on in your world? What have you been doing today?
Well, you know, I spoke with Mario Cristobal yesterday on the eve of signing day. Today was kind of tracking the class as it came in, and I'm writing a story that just went up on OregonLive.com about not so much even this class, but all the changes that Cristobal has been trying to implement since he took over in the 2 months as head coach to kind of push Oregon forward, you know, 2019, 2020, things that he thinks will push Oregon forward down the road. So I know that this class, you know, is kind of a disappointment in some ways because of not a particularly strong close, but he is saying that down the road, the way they're going to be evaluating prospects differently, he thinks that will be a big change.
This was a program that had the number one ranked recruiting class, you know, just months ago. And then Willie Taggart leaves, and then they get their big weekend wiped out by the Vegas Bowl. And by the way, they got their teeth kicked in there. Is his head spinning?
I think it's starting to slow down a little bit, but he basically said that there's really been no stop since December 5th when Willie left, because obviously he then interviewed for the job. So I think that he's been through this before, and I had said, does it get any easier recruiting, you know, the run-up to signing day? Did the early signing window, which took care of 15 players, did that make this, you know, next 6 weeks between then and this February signing window, did that make things any less hectic? And he said, oh, no, it never does. Even yesterday, he said that he hadn't looked away from his phone for more than 30 seconds, basically in 2 months. So I think that the head spinning is kind of part of the job, but this was especially wild for Oregon.
Where do they end up, do you think, after the dust settles today? You know, are they a top 15? Are they a top 10? Are they a top 20 program recruiting-wise?
Top 15 seems to be the consensus of where they'll end up. I think they're still going to be in the mix and likely to land an offensive lineman out of Utah, whose name I cannot pronounce. I think it's Sewell. But he's probably the last one on the board for Oregon. Don't believe he's said anything yet. So it's going to be, I think, higher than top 20.
We're talking to Andrew Greif of the Oregonian. He covers the Oregon Ducks. I've been asking this question for the last half hour, but who is the Oregon kid now under Mario Cristobal versus maybe Mike Bellotti or Chip Kelly or Mark Helfrich or Willie Taggart?
Well, it kind of depends on the position. Inside the trenches, he wants a kind of play bully ball. He wants to have maulers, big guys, not the kind of zone blocking, for lack of a better word, you know, the things you always heard about Oregon, these finesse offensive linemen. He wants someone who's 350 pounds, like Justin Johnson, the guy out of Philadelphia who just signed today. that's his type of trench guy. On the edges, he still wants the speed, just like all the previous coaches you mentioned. But something he said that was interesting today was that what they're going to be doing going forward is really, I think this kind of is probably similar to how Helfrich approached it than Taggart, is he's going to be looking a little bit closer on backgrounds. Background checks, as he said, something that's going to be a much bigger deal under him than certainly last year. And by that, he said they're looking at practice attendance, school attendance, grades improvement, durability. How often do you get hurt? You know, they're going to be asking coaches about what's this kid like when something doesn't go his way? How do they respond to that? And he thinks that that's going to be, you know, a big change. I mean, everybody is assessing their recruits in their own way, but he said just like the off-season weight program, basically what they want to do is take how Alabama recruited and import it to Oregon. And that includes doing one more big change, which is having four coaches talk to one recruit at all times. You have your head coach, your coordinator, the area coach in charge of the geographic region, and then your position coach. And then one recruit will basically have four people always in contact. Under Taggart, Chris Ball said it was at max two. And I think you saw that, like Trayshawn Harrison today out of Seattle, leaves for Florida State. He decommitted in December. Willie was one of his only points of contact with the staff. So when Willie left, all of a sudden they're playing serious catch-up. This is the form of insurance just in case anybody else leaves, you know, whether it's this year or next December.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian talking to us about the Oregon Ducks. He covers the Ducks, and you've just posted about 15 minutes ago a story on the Ducks and sort of the prognosis for this this offseason. He mentions in the piece, Mario Cristobal mentions the offseason program. It's not sexy to talk offseason. Like, everybody wants to talk about the season, but what does he mean by the offseason program needed improvement?
It's both recruiting and the weight room. And his vision of the weight room is modeled just off of Alabama's. I wrote a story about a month ago about how they wanted to basically have a West Coast clone of how the Crimson Tide approached the weight room. And the vibe I get, he didn't say this, but the vibe I get is that they want to be more functional with the way they do strength training, whereas before it was a lot of kind of some of like maybe more of like the, you know, the bench press still can be part of it, but maybe some of like more beachy lifts, you know, like the stuff that you kind of see on a poster. He wants guys to have everything, every lift focused on how would this play out on a football field. And he said, that's how Alabama did it. That's where we're going to do it. With the recruiting, again, it goes back to Alabama. He hasn't signed a recruiting director yet, but I'm sure that whoever he brings on will have some kind of familiarity with how things were done with the Crimson Tide, because that's what is a lot of the inspiration Chris Ball is pulling from.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian with us. I thought when Willie Taggart left the program that there would be some hangover and some discussion about Willie. Of course, that lasted into the Vegas Bowl.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
Then,
another ball game.
Then it picks up with recruiting. Does National Signing Day close the door on us really talking about Willie and the effect he had on Oregon?
Yep, I think so. I think it should, because, you know, this was the hangover, you know, the Trayshawn Harrisons of the world who were once committed to Oregon, who flipped to Florida State, you know, Malcolm Lamars, Warren Thompson, those guys who all once were coming to Eugene, look like, and now are going to Tallahassee. That's, I think, the last direct influence you'll see of Willie over Oregon. There are always going to be contrasts, though, of how Oregon does things under Cristobal that will always be kind of referred back to about how did Willie do them. But I think for the most part, this is probably the last time we will really be talking about Willie in a lot of ways.
All right, Greif, everybody's declaring victory today. Oregon, Oregon State, Utah, USC. When you look across the Pac-12, where's the buzz on National Signing Day?
Well, I mean, USC and Washington had some nice late movement. I know, you know, Washington picked someone from USC. USC picked some kids from Oregon. I think that's usually where the buzz is. And USC just always seems to be closing fast. And I know that the buzz really isn't around Oregon right now, but I would remind people that this is still, if it does end up being a top 15 class, the top class in Oregon history was number 11 in 2011. So this is not that far off. It's about four spots higher in some recruiting rankings than last year's class, despite more hurdles to it. So I think in perspective, it's still pretty good. Although when you have the dreams of number one as recently as October, November, I can obviously tell why it would be disappointing. But it's going to be really curious to see, I think, what Oregon does in 2019. That's what I really want to know. This is kind of a weird crapshoot recruiting period where there's all these things in Oregon's way. What do they do when they have no excuses and have a full year to do it? I think that'll be a huge measuring stick for Cristobal and his staff.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian. Thanks, Greif.
Thank you.
Read him online, OregonLive.com. Up next, I'm going to talk about expectations for Mario Cristobal. What should we be expecting next season? How many wins? What's the bottom line? No excuses, right? Plus, coming up later, we'll look around the Pac-12 conference. Did Chip Kelly make a mark today? And Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State head coach, will join us. Leave it here. Elon Musk is up to. Gliss, what'd you think of that?
That was awesome. That's all I can say. It was awesome. The best part was watching the two boosters that came back down and landed on the landing pads. That was unbelievable.
That was mind-blowing. And look, he, like, billionaires do these things. Like, they get bored, they do projects, they go in search of polar bears, and they buy submarines and stuff, but Elon Musk is doing some stuff. His idea was to send a Tesla into space, and he did this with his Falcon Heavy rocket launch. And then he launched a Tesla Roadster into space. And then, as Gliss pointed out, the boosters, which detached during the rocket launch, came back to Earth and landed, like, simultaneously. Like, this was high-tech outer space stuff, like from a movie. This isn't like the normal NASA rocket launch. And you think that that was the most impressive part, those rockets coming back? I was blown away by that. I almost fell off the sofa when I watched it. But I think what is even more brilliant was, I get why he put the Roadster out there. Number one, there's marketing for Tesla. Everybody's looking at a Tesla thinking, how cool is that, that Tesla's in space? I didn't know you could do that. Number two, see what he did here is he took science. We've all seen the NASA rocket launch. We've all seen it over and over and over again. Oh, cool. And then we turn the channel. He took it and he made it like a tangible, real human thing. Because even though, like, the rocket launch, you see it over and over. You know, rocket launch. Oh, cool. But you have the made on Earth by humans printed on the circuit board, and don't panic on the dashboard, and a spacesuit wearing dummy sitting in the car, and David Bowie blasting on the speakers. It was science with this human touch to it. It made me like him even more. And I gotta say, I think we were early adopters on this show. We tried to get him on like a year ago, did we not? Was he busy or something? Elon, you tried, or what's the deal here?
We can try to get him on the show.
Oh, you think he's going to be free now?
Yeah, why not? He wants to talk about his Tesla in space.
Get him on the show.
I think we'd have greater success getting Willie Taggart on to come talk about the Vegas Bowl. Just think.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
You know? By the way, Droz, you saw some video of Taggart today.
Yeah, they popped him up on ESPN2 a minute ago. They kind of went to the recruiting room for Florida State there, and he had the big spear, and all the lights were off. You couldn't really tell what was going on. The only light coming in was from the hallway, so it's just a bunch of people kind of celebrating, but all you see is just people moving around.
Yeah, I got to give Willie Taggart credit. It's a lot of sizzle. I'm not sure there's steak there. It's to be determined if Willie Taggart can flat coach or not. We know he can recruit. We know that there's sizzle. We know that he can row the boat, as PJ Fleck does. We know that he gets airtime. We know that he does a really good job, or whoever who's running his social media accounts do a good job with it. A lot of sizzle for Taggart. I don't know if he can coach. And I don't know next season if he's going to win more games than Mario Cristobal. Because I think Oregon's schedule kind of lines up nicely for Cristobal, especially with Herbert coming back. And I think Oregon will be much more locked in in year number one under Mario Cristobal than maybe Florida State under Willie Taggart. I think Willie, ultimately, we're going to find out if he can coach or not. And I think Willie, it was a big risk, I think, for Willie Taggart to go to Florida State at this point of his career. Forget the money. It was a risk for him because if it doesn't work out, he's going back to South Florida or somewhere like that. And I think he could have stayed at Oregon and used it as a springboard to somewhere like Florida State or maybe even better. Maybe Florida State was his dream job. I don't know. I didn't get to know Willie that well in his time here. But the Elon Musk thing is interesting to me because it's got undertones of the same type of showmanship and salesmanship that Willie Taggart had. See, I get that it's going to be cool to knock on Willie.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
But the big thing with Willie Taggart was he did bring excitement and enthusiasm, and he could recruit, and that number one recruiting class was all what he was about. He's going to recruit very well. But I don't know that it necessarily translates into Willie Taggart winning a national championship unless he surrounds himself with great coaches. Elon Musk is saying, look, we're going to go to space and beyond, and SpaceX is going to be attention-grabbing, and it's going to be about substance, and it's going to be about, this is a game changer yesterday. He had to prove it. And on any other day, a choreographed twin rocket landing after a launch would have been the main event. But then the car showed up. I didn't think it was real. I thought when I saw the car, I was like, oh, is that CBS News just putting a car up there? And they were like, no, that car is actually in space. I was like, that is this one on top of, that's the cherry on the sundae. So I'm looking at Cristobal, and I'm wondering if Cristobal has enough sizzle. And I'm looking at Taggart, and I'm going, I wonder if he has enough substance. And to me, it made sense that tandem stayed together. I'm not saying it would have been the Beatles, but I think it would have done much better than Mark Helfrich did. I think they would have been sniffing around a national championship, sniffing around a conference championship next season and beyond. I don't know if Oregon, I'm going to say something the Duck fans might be uncomfortable with, but I think in your heart of hearts, you know this. I don't know if Oregon realizes that the window to win a championship, at least in this era, I think it closed on them. Let me say that again. I think going to a national championship game against Auburn and going to a national championship game against Ohio State and not winning either game, I think we're going to look back on this in 5 or 10 years and we're going to say Oregon had its shot and that window closed. Can Mario Cristobal reopen another window 3, 4, 5 years from now? To be determined. But I think the window closed on Oregon. And I think a lot of Duck fans know it, or even if they're afraid to say it, they know it. You got there, you didn't win it. You were like the Buffalo Bills. You got there, you didn't win it. You know, you had your shot, and you just couldn't do it. And you lost. And there's no shame in losing to Cam Newton in Auburn. There's no shame in losing to Ohio State. It was, hey, you stuck your nose in there, but that window, because Chip Kelly leaves, because Mark Helfrich doesn't have the wherewithal to recruit a quarterback and pull the Velcro corners of this program back together, it got sloppy. They didn't develop a quarterback. They were relying upon Verdon Adams and whoever else they could grab in there at quarterback. Oh, we found Justin Herbert almost as an afterthought, and it wasn't enough. And even if Helfrich had stayed, it was a 8-win program, 9-win program in its best years, and a 5 or 6 or 7-win program in its lean years. And I don't think that was good enough anymore for the Oregon fan. I think the window closed on Oregon. And I think there's no shame in that. I'm not trying to be mean here. That there was an opportunity there to have recruiting classes that were perennially formidable, that also went in conjunction with results on the field. Those programs weren't getting, you know, knocked out of a Vegas Bowl or knocked out of an Alamo Bowl. Those programs were playing for the national championship in the first ever college football playoff and in the BCS against Cam Newton and Auburn and the Heisman Trophy winner and all that. And I think if Oregon is not going to get real with itself and go, look, We had a shot and that window closed. Now what do? As we redirect, you've got to use it as a pivot point. You think the Patriots are sitting around today going, you know what? Damn, that window closed on us. Oh, well, see you in 5 years. They're not. They're going, how do we pivot? Who's expendable on this roster? What coaches who have left us, who do we replace them with? What's going on with Josh McDaniels? What do we do on the defensive side of the ball? The Patriots, because they're a great organization, will pivot. They'll pivot the way the Spurs did when Tim Duncan retired. The Spurs will pivot. They'll pivot if Kawhi Leonard leaves. It's what great organizations do. They don't get mired in looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, we've got to make a hire that sustains the next 2 or 3 years as the window starts to close. And that's what Oregon did with Mark Helfrich and promoting Mark Helfrich after Chip Kelly. Continuity. I'm not saying it was the wrong move, but that's what they chose. They chose continuity over going, let's find the next visionary. Because Chip Kelly was a visionary coach at that time. Now Kelly's back in the league. He's not on your side. And you've got USC making a lot of noise today on National Signing Day. We'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. And I think if you're Oregon, you got to acknowledge, look, our shot ended. It closed. We've got to pivot now. Cristobal, you're the guy. What do you need? Because that Oregon kid that was flashy and into uniforms and all that, it isn't about that kid anymore. It's got to be about Mario Cristobal and the kind of kids he's recruiting. Leave it here. You're listening to the Bald-Faced Truth on the BFT Radio Network. Punch it Audio's in front of us. You're listening on 102.9 and 750 The Game in Portland.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
I've got a pair of tickets to Thursday night's Oregon Ducks basketball game and a pair of tickets for Thursday night's Oregon State basketball game. We're going to do a Eugene-only giveaway in this hour. So if you're a listener on Fox Sports Eugene, K-O-R-E, in Eugene, in the Springfield area, I have two pairs of tickets. I'll give you the phone number to win coming up in just a few minutes. I want to talk a little bit about, I said earlier I was talking about grades. And if you missed it, grab the podcast. You should be subscribed anyway on iTunes and SoundCloud to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio podcast. But I was talking about the ownership that your kids have to have when it comes to grades. This isn't a me thing. I've read this. I buy into it. I go, that's right. Yeah. Why should I care more about the grades than kids care about it? And as parents, we do that, right? We get all wrapped up in the kids' grades. And are we doing a good job? Those are their grades. That's your grade. You know, if you're in the sixth grade and you're pulling A's and B's, hey, good for you. You must value your future. And one of the things I read in that book, the book's called Love and Logic. It's parenting. They have one for teenagers and one's for kids. And one of the things I read was there was a parent who had a high school junior who showed up with a bunch of D's on his report card. And the dad, instead of getting mad, see, grounding doesn't work when it comes to grades. Neither does giving money for grades. The dad turned to the kid and said, you know, I've been thinking, this school thing doesn't seem like it's working out for you. You know, and I go to work every day and I pay the mortgage and I pay the bills and I'm buying you clothes and food. And it just doesn't seem like you're putting in the effort because you're not getting the grades. So maybe we should talk about you dropping out and getting a job. And maybe contributing your paycheck, like your whole paycheck, to go into the family to help pay for things. And the kid was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, it's just like the effort doesn't seem like it's there. It doesn't seem like you're really into this. These are your grades. And the conversation eventually turned to the kid breaking down and going, no, I'll go to school. Because you know what? It did the same thing. I was in the Dutch Bros drive-thru this morning. And again, the barista did the same damn thing to the high school freshman that I talked about a couple weeks ago. I said to the barista, hey, how you doing? And she said, she turns to the kid who's in the passenger seat beside me and says, you in high school? She says, yeah. She goes, man, this is the greatest time ever. My dad used to take me through Dutch Bros 2 in the morning. And I was sitting there going, yeah. And then she says, now I just cry myself to sleep with bills. And I said, that was the best thing she could have said. I was like, you need to be going to college, kid. You need to be moving somewhere. What direction are you moving in? She goes, no, I just cry myself to sleep because I realize I'm just working. And I go, this is the greatest time of your life. Doesn't get any better than right now where you are. Let's play.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
I talked about Jacob Copeland, number 5 rated wide receiver in America, committed today to Florida. He passed on Alabama. He passed on Tennessee. His mother, who was seated next to him at the news conference, she got up and walked away. Here's what it sounded like. Punch it.
Great. So, Jacob, you're going to Florida. Who just got up and left there? And to your right, who got up and left?
Oh, that was my mom.
He goes on to ask him. The reporter does. Why did she leave? He says, I don't know. See, I kind of like two things that are wrong here. The mom was wrong to get up and walk away and walk out. I don't care how disappointed you are. You don't show up your kid while your kid's making a life decision. I also wonder what's wrong in your household that you didn't know he was picking Florida. You're wearing a Tennessee shirt or a Tennessee hat and an Alabama shirt. Then the announcer, the broadcaster, he knew damn well that that was mom. I knew that was mom. You know, he was trying to get a little good TV out of this. What happened there? Your mom just walked away. It's a reality television show in that moment. Shame on ESPN. Sean Devaney was on yesterday's show. We talked to the NBA writer about the Blazers. He says the Blazers have to build around either Damian Lillard or C.J. McCollum, but not both. I happen to agree with him. Punch it.
With those two guys, they have as good assets as you're going to find, and they just need to find the right trade, I think, for one or two of those guys. Because I don't think that you're going to build this whole franchise from the backcourt. I think you need to pick one of those two guys.
I also know that, you know, Lillard will be 28 this summer. McCollum turned 26 in September. If you're waiting for Zach Collins to grow up, if you're waiting for the draft pick that you get this June to grow up and save the franchise, if you're looking for a savior in free agency, see, Lillard's window is 3 years. We're talking about championship windows opening and closing. He's got 3 years. I think when he turns 31, you start to see him on the backside of his career. So you've got 3 seasons, if you're Damian Lillard, to be at your best winning. You've got maybe 5 seasons if you're C.J. McCollum. Does that line up with Zach Collins' development? Does it line up with picking another rookie this year and saying to a, you know, 20-year-old kid, come and save us? I think you have a timing problem if you're the Blazers. And that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't look to build around both those guys. I would try to get some urgency here. Try to go out and find a trade that would bring a all-star caliber 4 to this lineup. By the way, really interesting note. When you talk about the trade deadline, last February there were 13 trades between February 13th and February 23rd. So far, only 4 trades this year with 24 hours to go in the deadline. Steve Kerr of the Warriors saying, we just weren't right. They lose to Oklahoma City. Punch it.
It didn't feel like us, that's for sure. Ball wasn't moving, and when it was moving, it was generally moving to the wrong team. You know, another 25 turnover night. So, yeah, we're out of whack right now. We're just not playing the way we normally do in terms of the ball movement and the pace and the spacing, and defense has not been good either. So it's been a struggle.
I like this. I like what we're seeing, because I criticize this league and I say, oh, we all know how this is going to end. At the beginning of the year, it was Cleveland and Golden State heading for a repeat in the finals. Cleveland doesn't look like it can get there, and the Warriors look like they're vulnerable, I guess, for now. Oklahoma City, Houston. What about the officials? Steve Kerr not pointing the finger. Punch it.
This game had nothing to do with the officials. They were fine. They missed some calls. But we were way worse than the officials were. So they were fine. They had nothing to do with it. We got completely outplayed.
Got beat by 12 in the first quarter. You don't blame the officials for that. Isaiah Thomas looking over at the Cavs going, it's an adversity issue. We just can't handle adversity. Punch it.
As players, we gotta do better. And it's like right now, when we hit adversity, we go our separate ways. That's just how I feel, and it looks like that as well.
Orlando 116, Cleveland 98. By the way, Cleveland was up 12 in the first quarter, scored 43 points in the first quarter, 9 points in the fourth quarter. Problem. The Magic recovered from a 21-point deficit and beat the Cavs. Okay? This is a team that entered the game with 16 wins. Orlando. Cleveland's in trouble. They're 8 games over .500. They're spinning. LeBron's saying he'll be there all year. He's not going to waive his trade. His no trade clause. Yep. Problems in Cleveland. So I kind of like it. I kind of like that. You've got the Warriors who look a little vulnerable. At least there's some intrigue. It's not like you could see anybody aside from Boston or Cleveland or Golden State or Houston winning it. But, you know, it's even Toronto. I don't see Toronto as a real threat to win it. But I also now go, at least, you know, there's a handful of teams instead of two or three that we could say would win the NBA championship. It's not the NFL yet. It's got work to do. And you know what? There's some ways you could fix the NBA. You get rid of the guaranteed contracts. You allow a team like the Blazers to immediately go, you know what, Myers Leonard, Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, you're not worth the money we're paying you. We're releasing you. And you're out of their contracts? That would fix it. Because right now at the trade deadline, all the Portland fans are sitting around either praying for two things. One, praying that CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard will be traded for a power forward that will shift the trajectory of the franchise. Or just praying they get rid of one of the bad contracts. I don't know which is bigger. Stephen A. Smith had a take on the Cavs. He thought they were terrific. No, he didn't.
They're not a team. They're sorry. They look quite pathetic. They can't defend Max. As I said on SportsCenter just a few months ago, Max has blessed us with this information about himself and how he has struggled with bad back issues periodically. Max could look like he could go out there and average 20 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's no chemistry whatsoever. And then on top of it all, the most glaring thing is their lack of effort. I think LeBron James is gone at the end of the season. I think Tyronn Lue is gone at the end of this season. I think everything is going to change in Cleveland. That's how bad it has looked.
Yes, agreed. And here's the other thing. If you are Cleveland's ownership, you have a bigger problem because LeBron is going to leave. You're not going to be able to attract. You're going to end up like Portland where you can't attract a frontline blue chip free agent, even if he's homegrown. And you're not getting anything for LeBron in the end. Cleveland is going to turn into the Cleveland Browns, as Jim Rome said it today. You got the Browns across the street that don't look so bad. Rob Gronkowski and a 911 call? I'll play that coming up. Gronk had a 911 call? Plus, how many torn ACLs in the whole NFL season? We had a torn ACL in the NBA last night. But how about in the entire NFL season? We'll talk about knee injuries in the NFL and where the trends are there. But that 911 call, we've got the 911 call from Gronkowski's incident with law enforcement. I'll play that coming up. And if you are somebody in Eugene listening on Fox Sports Eugene, this is a Eugene-only giveaway, okay? So don't be Portland. Don't be a prize pig in Portland. But if you want to go to the Oregon Ducks men's basketball game tomorrow night, or you want to go to the Beavers game tomorrow night, caller number 10 gets the first pick. Caller number 11 gets the second pick. 541-343-KORE. That's core. 541-343-KORE to win. Even if LeBron James were willing to waive his no-trade clause, he's got a $33.3 million salary. It got me thinking about what kinds of trades Cleveland could make, entertaining offers for LeBron James. He will likely opt out of his deal for 2018-2019 and become a free agent in July. So that eliminates a lot of contenders and lottery teams that would be interested in giving up a good, young, talented player. But who are the trade partners potentially? Brian Windhorst, who is the LeBron guy, works at ESPN. He's the LeBron guy. And he talked about the ideal scenario in a potential LeBron-Dan Gilbert meeting of the minds. Listen to this for a second.
Doug, ideally what you would have here is you would have LeBron and Dan Gilbert come together and sit down and figure out how they're going to proceed, whether LeBron commits to the organization and Dan all of his trades everything he's got to try to make them better now, or whether LeBron cannot commit to the organization and they don't do anything and move on. I don't think that's going to happen. And so I think in the absence of that, the most prudent thing for where I sit is for the Cavs to make several deals to try to change the entire chemistry of the team. Right now, being around this team, being in this locker room, you cannot help but to feel just the tension and the mistrust and the dislike that exists. Part of it is that there's some players who are not playing up to their level that they're expected. Part of it is there's a whole bunch of new players here who LeBron James didn't get contracts for, didn't win rings, didn't deliver on a high level, and there isn't the trust between LeBron. And with LeBron not playing well and them getting blamed for it, it's become an issue in the locker room. So part of me says that even if they make a trade and they trade four or five guys, and even if the players they don't get back are any better, changing up half the locker room right now might be what it needs to snap LeBron James back into being LeBron James, because the Cavs' biggest problem, at least for this season, is that LeBron has stopped playing like LeBron. And that is one of the reasons why they are getting embarrassed night in and night out. LeBron's effort level tonight was as bad as I've ever seen it. And he sets the tone for everybody else. And the Cavs.
All right, there's Brian Windhorst of ESPN talking about LeBron. I have no sympathy for LeBron James and what he's going through. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's a talented, gifted player who is generational MVP and headed to the Hall of Fame. It's not that I'm just hating on him because he's great. I don't like some of the things that he's, the way he's carried himself, including this season as his team's struggling, that Instagram post congratulating himself on 40,000 points. He's part of the problem. Look, if he really wants to go to the Lakers, it's not like the Lakers are going to give up a bunch of players and trade with Cleveland. They just know he's going to get, they're going to get him eventually. You know, you start looking around the league and you go, okay, eliminate the 14 teams that are in the lottery. They're not going to trade for LeBron because this is a one season thing. Would the Celtics do it? No. Would the Pacers do it? No. Would the Miami Heat take him back in a trade? Would the Milwaukee Bucks take him? Is that an interesting one? How about the 76ers? You start looking for homes for him, and you go, you know, is there any way, like with San Antonio? Could you see LeBron ended up in San Antonio? If you were the Spurs and Greg Popovich, Greg Popovich would love to coach LeBron. But the problem is that the Cavs are going to want Kawhi Leonard in that deal. And LaMarcus Aldridge, the extension he just got, eliminates him from this deal. And then, so what are you going to do? Take Danny Green, Rudy Gay, Tony Parker, Pau Gasol? I don't think so. You start looking around the league and you go, yeah, the Blazers would take it. How about Evan Turner? for LeBron. Sorry, Evan, if you're listening. But outside of like Lillard and McCollum, is there anything Cleveland would be interested in this roster that makes sense? A $33.3 million LeBron James? You know? All right, we'll give you Myers Leonard, Evan Turner, and Mo Harkless. Deal or no deal? Dan Gilbert. How dumb are you, Dan Gilbert? Is that game? So really the only place that I could potentially see LeBron going is somewhere like Milwaukee. But the better choice is like Brian Windhorst of ESPN saying, look, if you're Dan Gilbert, you know you have a chemistry problem, not just in the locker room. You have an owner and a star player who do not see eye to eye politically. And I told you months ago, while we were all arguing over politics, when I allowed that on this show for like 15 minutes, I told you months ago I thought that free agents one day would make their decisions based on politics. I don't think that LeBron liked Daniel Gilbert's political leanings. I don't think he liked that he was a Trump supporter. And I think LeBron is going to exercise his right to not work for Dan Gilbert. Who's bigger there? Who's more important? And the bigger question is, like, whoever takes LeBron in summer free agency, and it's probably the Lakers, you have to be really careful about avoiding what Cleveland did in assembling players around LeBron that just don't work and don't fit. Because Windhorst is right. Windhorst knows LeBron inside and out, knows the entourage, knows the story. Windhorst was working at the Akron newspaper when LeBron came up as a high school kid. Windhorst was close to him. He knows him. He knows the dynamic. He understands the people around LeBron. He understands what is important to LeBron. Whenever you want to talk LeBron, Brian Windhorst of ESPN is the guy you want to listen to. So, you know, ESPN literally hired him because he knows LeBron. He knows and knows what makes him tick. And I'm not saying he's friendly to LeBron. I'm just saying he understands the magnitude and the footprint and all the tentacles that come with taking a generational superstar. Anthony Slater in the Bay Area working for The Athletic is the Kevin Durant guy. So you have these individuals who have covered these players and know them and know what makes them work and tick. And look, if you're LeBron, you have to be looking around the league right now because you know it's over in Cleveland. You know it's ending. It's not going anywhere. You have to be looking around going, okay, who's coming with me to L.A.? Because that's where this goes. So I'm going to L.A. and who's coming with me? And by the way, do I need every single dollar or do I leave some on the table like in a Tim Duncan move? Where I go, all right, I want talent around me, and I'm willing to pay for it. So I'll take less money, and I'll go sign a contract with the Lakers. But I want to bring this guy and this guy with me. So he has to either be doing that right now as he looks around the league. And by the way, CJ McCollum would be a really interesting player alongside LeBron. I just think because of his creativity, he was a complimentary player. And I think he's a much better compliment to LeBron than he is to Damian Lillard. On a Lillard team, there's duplication with CJ McCollum. There's a problem in the backcourt with Lillard and McCollum both being not great defenders. But if you put a stud defender in the backcourt and CJ McCollum on a LeBron team, LeBron can have the ball in his hands. So can McCollum. I like that combination better than anything Cleveland's got going. So if you are Dan Gilbert and Cleveland, your only play here is to try to trade the pieces that are around LeBron right now and hope that you strike gold. I mean, it's like you're in a casino, right? You walk into the casino, you walk in with $500. I give you $500 to go play. And you blow $100 playing blackjack. Then you go to the roulette wheel and you drop another $100. Then you're at the craps table and you drop another $100. Now you're starting to worry, right? You're starting to look down and go, all right, how much, you know, I'm about to blow this money. How bad am I going to feel about losing $500? Well, now Dan Gilbert's down to his last 20. He's looking around the table. He's looking around the casino going, all right, I got to roll the dice here. So I think you're going to see Cleveland shake things up. But I also think that if you are a Blazer fan, don't get your hopes up that LeBron's coming to Portland. because it's just he doesn't fit. He doesn't fit in places. And I keep thinking, like, you got to find a deal. Like, a lot of teams would love to have LeBron, even renting him for one season. But if you are Cleveland, would you do any of the deals that where you're going to get, you know, pennies on the dollar back? Could you see LeBron going to the Warriors? I couldn't. There are people talking about it. Like, why would the best team in the NBA without LeBron gut their own roster and their own shot to win another championship trying to bring a guy on that they just beat? By the way, part of the reason why the Warriors won in the playoffs was the strength of their bench, and you'd have to give up that bench strength to do it. Houston would do it. Houston would be, you know, they would have a shot. But the problem is, besides Eric Gordon, is there anybody on the Rockets roster that Cleveland would want? I don't think so. All right, coming up, we'll talk to Matt Prem of 24/7 Sports about Pac-12 recruiting. Did Chip Kelly make a dent today? Did he do anything splashy, or is he getting outshined by USC? Plus, Oregon State football coach Jonathan Smith will be with us. Who's the Oregon State kid? Is it a lunch bucket kid anymore? It used to be. We used to say, oh, that's a lunch bucket kid, goes to Oregon State, hardworking, overachiever, all that stuff. What's Jonathan Smith say the kind of kid who goes to Oregon State is now? We'll talk to him about that. You're listening to the Bald Faced Truth on the BFT Radio Network. I've been running a lot more in the gym, mostly because my wife has started running. She used to hate running. Now she's running in the gym all the time. So I jumped on the treadmill beside her. And you know what? I kind of found, like, because my doctor told me too, he's like, when you hit your 40s, he said, you have to work out harder. You have to turn up the intensity. And I didn't know what he was talking about until I got back into the gym. As I've mentioned, I'm under construction. I got back into the gym. We should put yellow tape up around me. That's how under construction I am right now. Gliss, are you still under construction down there? Huh?
When I have time, a little bit here and there.
Are you? I gave you a hard time when you first announced that you were working out.
That was a long time ago.
Have you maintained?
Not as much as I should.
What stands in the way?
Just mostly the new baby. It's like we're still trying to figure out our schedules with the four kids in the house and where they all go every day. It's hard for me to keep track. I'm making excuses. I just need to make the time for it.
I didn't even say a word. But I started running more on the treadmill in the gym, and it's good. It's a good workout, but my wife will do like 45 minutes on that treadmill. I can't do that long. I try to go a little faster, and I go a shorter distance, but I go faster, so a little more intensity. So I'll do like 25 minutes of running. But the other day, I went running on the street, like real running, like in the wild. You know what I mean? Because you go in the gym, and you're on the treadmill. I don't think that you realize that you can cheat on the treadmill. You could just lift your foot up and the treadmill moves underneath you. See? So you can do this running where you're kind of just lifting your feet. You're kind of shuffling more than you're actually striding and running. So I think I was on the street and I have this loop by my house and there's hills. So there's this hill that's a pretty steep hill. You've been to my house, like, for a Christmas party, whatever.
It's no joke. It's a steep hill.
Yeah, that's like Jerry Rice's hill, okay? So I come out of my house the other day, and I go, you know what? I didn't get into the gym today, so I'm going to run for like 25 minutes right now. And this loop is a 1 mile loop that I can run. I figured I'd just run it twice and I would just jog it. And so I got out on the loop and I turn and I go up this grade that's kind of like moderately steep, but I'm still okay. And then I come down, then I come around and the last third is all uphill. And I realized as I was going up the hill, like I was going to throw up. Like I felt like I was going to throw up. That's how like how hard my heart was pounding. And I kept thinking about that doctor who told me, you need to increase your intensity when you hit 40s. And I kept thinking like, is this how I die? Like, you know, my daily thing, check. That's how it is. Is this how I go? Like, I'm lying on the pavement on this hill. And how far down the hill would I roll right now if I ended up falling? But as I'm running, in front of me appears a pedestrian who's walking. Is that the definition of a pedestrian? Are they walking? Or can a pedestrian be running?
Yeah, I think they can be running. I think it's just a person that's just out in public.
Is that true? But I always thought like a pedestrian had, is it somebody who is walking? No, the definition is, yeah, pedestrian by definition is a person walking along a road or in a developed area.
So if you're running, you don't qualify as a pedestrian?
Now you're under construction. You're a workout. You're on a workout. So that's all you have to do. It wasn't a pedestrian, Your Honor. He was running. So I'm running. And I'm running, but I'm not moving that fast because it's uphill and it's a brutal hill. And I'm also doing a little bit of like I'm really working. I'm laboring as I come up the hill. And I realize that this pedestrian is a school kid. Now I'm afraid that I'm going to scare the kid because I'm sure that kid has been told, don't talk to strangers, just like my kids have been told. Go straight home. You don't need to be talking to people. Even if somebody comes up to you and says they lost your puppy or lost their puppy, you don't. I would never tell anybody, you know, the stuff you handle with your kids because you've watched TV. You tell your kids, like, if anybody ever says they're here to pick you up, I would never send anybody to pick you up that you didn't know, all that stuff. So all this thought's going through my head as I'm approaching this child from behind. And the kid looks like she's probably about 11-year-old girl, okay? She's walking. And she's got her backpack. And I'm going, I'm coming up behind her, and I'm like, I at this moment, I don't want to scare her because it's starting to get dark, and she doesn't want some creepy old guy running up behind her who's like panting. So I start to go like, maybe I should cross the street. And then I realize like there's traffic coming, whatever. I can't really cross the street. So I'm just going to have to blow by her, except she's walking at a pace. Because I'm now on like the end of my run, she's walking at a pace that is not that much slower than I'm running. And so I realize this is going to be a long exchange as I go by her. And so as I go by, I attempt to be like, hey, how's it going? Except I can't breathe. And I've been running. And she just looks over at me. And it was nothing she said. It was the expression on her face that told me that I didn't look as cool as maybe I think I look in the gym when I'm running. Because she just looked at me like, you pathetic old guy. If you fall over right now, and I was hopeful, like, you know, if I did fall over, she'd just leave me. Just leave me. Just go. You don't need to stop. You don't need to run and tell anybody because I'll be okay. But it gets me thinking, like, the people who are out road running, correct me if I'm wrong. If you're a diehard runner and you're on the road, that is so much harder than running on the treadmill in the gym. And I did it on back-to-back-to-back-to-back days. So I was like treadmill, treadmill, on the road, treadmill. When I did that lap of 1 mile, I continued after that because I was like, I need to get in my 25 minutes. But I didn't make two full laps. I was like, there's no way I could go up that hill a second time. Like, I literally think I should be playing wide receiver for the 49ers if I could get up that hill a second time on a sprint. But I just noticed how few people were out. And the weather wasn't great, but how few people. It was that kid. It was one old guy who was walking maybe a little bit earlier in my run. And then other than that, nobody was out. And so I get a day like today in the Portland metropolitan area where the sun is out. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did, like, your spirit not lift when you looked outside? Droz, did you not go, okay, finally?
It's like the nicest day in like weeks, I feel.
Best day of the year, I think. Gliss, is your spirit not better because of this?
It's beautiful, and it was actually quite nice on Monday as well when I got home from work. It was like felt like it was 70 degrees outside.
Yeah, this is really nice. I'm looking around outside going, "This, I could do this. I might go running again outside." Do you do any running on the road, on the street? Versus gym running.
So I think we've talked about this. I've tried the gym. I don't think the gym works for me. I think I'm kind of the opposite of you. I think I need to do it in my own element and just kind of get in the practice of doing it. So running is an option. We have an elliptical at the house, but I'm kind of setting up an area in the garage once...
You're gonna
once
do a home gym.
Yeah, once I get the garage cleaned up, which I've been saying I'm going to do for the last 2 years, then I'm going to do it in the garage.
I need to be in the gym because I gotta bang the steel after I run on the treadmill. We put the construction tape up around me, and then I oil up, and then I start banging the steel. No, I've talked about the gym with on the show, and I've had a lot of our listeners who will come up to me in the gym because I talked about the dumbbells in particular, like how I'll go to grab a dumbbell, and maybe some young guy will grab, like I'll grab like the 30. And some guy next to me will grab the 35. Well, I'll put the 30 down and grab the 40 because I'm competitive that way.
So you're actually there just for the competition.
Well, I'm there keeping score. I pull out my score sheet afterwards. And I'm like there. The other day I saw a pair of shoes laying on the ground in the middle of the gym. Just laying there right by the rack. And I thought to myself, like, was this the rapture? Like, did somebody just go gone? Or what happened? There's just did somebody bring... Oh, I accidentally brought two pairs of shoes out onto the gym floor? I didn't quite understand that. All right, Matt Prem is going to be with us next. He covers recruiting. That's his beat. I'm going to ask him about the Pac-12. Chip Kelly, USC, Oregon, Oregon State. What happened today on National Signing Day, and what's left to be done? Seven Sports covers recruiting, among other things. Does a great job. I want to ask him all about the Pac-12. I want to ask him about Chip Kelly. I want to ask him about the Oregon Ducks. I want to ask him about Oregon State. But most of all, I want to ask him, too, because I think he's living kind of a dream in covering college athletics and getting to write and report for a living. I want to ask him what that's like, and he joins us now. When did you want to do what you're doing, Prem?
Ooh, probably the first year after I was done with college, which was 2009, I couldn't find a job, and I was back at home living with my parents, and I was working at Cold Stone Creamery and doing something else, working another job just to pay bills and pay my student loans off, and started writing as a therapeutic way of just, you know, I got kind of down because that was when, you know, the job market was terrible, and I just needed to do something that was fun for me, and I just made it a point, I'm going to write about Oregon basketball, and one today, and it kind of grew into having an internship at a radio station here in town in Eugene. Somehow they found my blog and they liked it enough to have me come in and do some stuff for them, and that led to another thing, which led to another thing, and in 2009 I started doing this as a side job, and about 3 years ago is when I did it full time.
When you were working at Cold Stone, how yoked were your forearms?
They weren't very yoked because I'd always bring home ice cream for me and my roommates. And I mean, I would go from working at Cold Stone to working at the radio station. And you know, Justin Myers, he worked for you for a couple years, and he hated it because I'd come in and I'd make the studio smell like waffles, and it'd just make everyone hungry.
I go into Cold Stone, there'd be like a 16-year-old girl working there. She looks like olive oil, and then you look down at her forearms, and she's got Popeye forearms. It's crazy. The other thing that gets me about Cold Stone is, you know that sample spoon?
Yeah.
You guys would give out the sample spoon. One time, Anna was with me, and she didn't realize that the sample spoons went into that silver thing that was the trash can.
Oh, and she grabbed one.
She grabbed one and used the spoon out of there. And I was like, what are you doing? That's somebody's spoon. That's disgusting.
That happens more often than you'd think.
Yeah, we laugh about it now every time we see that little jar. All right, this is not supposed to be a Cold Stone segment. Preem, let's talk recruiting. Who's splashy in the Pac-12 today? USC, is it fair to say that they're winning the day?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's really comical on signing day for me and fun and entertaining because you get a better workout following signing day than going into your spin class because everybody wins. USC lost a U.S. Army All-American defensive tackle to Washington yesterday. But the spin was that opened up a spot for them to steal Lamar Winston from Oregon, from Central Catholic, which happened yesterday, and gave them then the room to also bring in two receivers if they wanted to, if they could get them. And that was Devin Williams, who was going to go to Oregon two weeks ago. He committed to USC over the Ducks today. And then they were trying to get Michael Ezeki, who was also a one-time Oregon commit, to commit. He went to UCLA. But USC's cleaned up. They've landed a star linebacker today, a five-star. They've landed Elijah Griffin, a five-star defensive back. They're in on a couple other prospects that are still on the board that are high-profile guys from Southern California that are probably going to go there as well. They have once again, you know, they finish strong every year, and this is just another example of that, of how they kind of choose who they want and the rest of the Pac-12 figures out, okay, now what do we do?
Is that always how it's been, or do you see that they're getting a little sharper, maybe back towards the Pete Carroll era USC teams?
I would say historically it's always been that way. Now there's been some years where, you know, Oregon has been able to go out and get guys, you know, to not go there, like an Eric Armstead or DeAnthony Thomas. But by and large, for the most part, it doesn't matter who the head coach is at USC. The school recruits itself, and as long as you're competent and as long as you've got some young assistants that are personable and exciting and you win 9 games a year, you're going to bring in star recruits every year.
Matt Preem is with us, 24/7 Sports. Chip Kelly, he do anything of interest today?
Oh, he got a Michael Ezeki, which was a 4-star tight end, you know, receiver hybrid type guy. Oregon really wanted him. Oregon had him committed under Willie Taggart. And the Ducks thought, you know, a week and a half ago, it was a done deal and that they'd, you know, done enough to keep his commitment and to lock everything up and have Ezeki sign with the Ducks today. That obviously didn't happen, and that was a big deal. He was able to go out and keep Dorian Thompson-Robinson, a quarterback from Bishop Gorman High School, a dual threat guy. That, you know, that's probably going to be at least my, you know, somewhat educated guess, because I don't, you know, super follow UCLA daily like I do for Oregon. But I would think he's probably going to be the front runner going into the fall camp to be the starting quarterback. He was able to keep him. Chip recruits to his system. He doesn't necessarily go out and say, we want all the 5-star guys. He's going to go out and find a guy that's, you know, hey, this guy runs this type of a 40. He's got this type of a measurables. We think we can develop him into a guy that's going to be pretty good in 2 or 3 years.
We're talking to Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, about recruiting. You mentioned the Ducks losing a player. In the end, everybody's going to declare victory. How do you sort through what Oregon did, and how do you grade them on a day like today?
Yeah, look, you look at today only, it's not a good day because they lost a lot of guys. I think they're going to get Penei Sewell, an offensive tackle, the best player from Utah. He commits in about 7 to 10 minutes. I think he goes to Oregon. But overall, today only is not a good day for Oregon football. But if you look at where Oregon is at for the 2018 class as a whole, they've done a really good job. Because let's look at this. They are 11-15 in the last 2 years. They've had 3 head coaches in the last 15 years. They're going to finish with guaranteed a top 20 class, And yet, if they can sneak in a couple guys, they've still got a legit chance at getting either the best recruiting class in program history or finishing really close to that. And you look at what they've done, what we've seen their last time they played a football game in Vegas, and they were able to accomplish all of this. That's still pretty good. It's not an elite class, but at the same time, I think it's a class stacked on the last year's group that is taking that step in the right direction to getting Oregon back to having the depth, having the talent at the starting positions, having the exciting players at certain at skill spots to be able to win and to be able to compete for a conference championship. Because the last two or three years, they didn't have that depth, and they didn't have that talent at every position that was starting. They're starting to get closer to that. They're not all the way there yet, but this is another class overall that's taking that step in that right direction.
We always say things like, oh, he's a typical Oregon kid. Who's the Oregon kid under Mario Cristobal?
I think you look at a kid from Lake Oswego, Dawson Gillimo, or you look at Javon Holland or Steve Stevens, two really good safeties from the Bay Area up north, or Fresno area as well in California. Speed. Gillimo is really big. He's really strong. He's really agile for his size, and he's probably not the highest graded guy, but he went to two Under Armour games. He went to the Under Armour All-American game, and he went to the Polynesian All-American game. And at both of those events, he was one of the better offensive linemen at those camps. And you know, he doesn't have as much notoriety as some of the big boys from SoCal and other places, but when stacked up against other players around the country that are considered the best, he did pretty well.
All right. I appreciate you, Matt Preem. I'm glad you're not scooping ice cream that you're not eating.
So am I.
All right. There he is, Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports. I had worse jobs than that. I worked, I had one job that I quit. I'm not proud of this, but I was working as a bag boy at a grocery store in California. And it was a holiday weekend. I think it was 4th of July weekend. And the bosses were so cheap, they didn't want to pay everybody double time that they had to pay for the holiday weekend. So they had me, the only bagger was me. It was 105 degrees. And I was running around all day, and I was towards the end of my shift, and there were no carts left. And they said, hey, can you go out to the parking lot and round up all the carts? And I jogged out to the parking lot, and it hit me. A cool breeze hit me as I ran out into the parking lot. I took off my apron. I put it in one of the carts. I got in my car, and I went home. My boss called me when I got home. He says, I think you accidentally left. And I said, it was no accident. I'm not made for this. Thank you for the opportunity. I never even picked up my paycheck. I worked for free, but I was out. I'm not saying you should quit. You shouldn't quit. Leave it here. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth on the BFT Radio Network.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
Little news out of Southern California. According to the LA Times, USC has signed Clay Helton to a contract extension. National signing day. Clay Helton. You signed. He was 11-3, won the Pac-12 championship, won the championship game. And by the way, he lost three of the first four games last year and then beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl. The only coach in Trojans history to win 10 games in his first two seasons. So there he is getting his extension on National Signing Day. And don't think that's coincidental, is it? Like, coincidentally, no. The guy produced, won the bowl games, won the season, he's won the offseason. USC's scary. It's always been like if they ever got it together, look out. because we could talk around the conference, right? You could talk about UCLA in powder blue, and you could talk about Arizona State and go, why isn't Arizona State better? Every year we expect them to be better. Look at the beautiful weather they have. Look at the population that they have, the proximity. They're in Phoenix, and they can get to California and draw kids out of there. And all that aside, USC has got it built in. I mean, it just produces, and you've got talent, and the kids want to play there. And Chip Kelly, like, we all have wanted to hand Chip Kelly the baton and be like, he's going to own L.A. He didn't today. USC did what USC does. And USC, which is coming off those back-to-back 10-plus win seasons under Clay Helton in a conference championship, in their conference title game victory, all of a sudden, you look at USC and you're like, they're back. Or did you already say that last year? If you had any doubts about USC being back, they're back, and Clay Helton's got an extension that takes him through 2023. And that's what the kids like to see. They like to see 5 years. I like to see the coach committed for 5 years if I'm a player. That's what the coaches say. So they can get the five-year deals and the rolling extensions. It's all about job security, because you know what? Like radio show hosts, football coaches know how it ends. It ends with them getting fired. Very few Bear Bryants out there. Like, Nick Saban will call his shot. But for this radio show host and for most college football coaches, you know it ends with you holding a cardboard box at some point. It's just a matter of how long can you hold them off. By the way, a couple things going on of note that I want to talk about. A week from Friday, this host, as mentioned before, will be hosting Dan Patrick's national radio program. Patrick's on vacation or something. Do we know what he's doing, Gliss? Is he in the Olympics, or what is he doing?
That was actually my thought. I actually looked it up this morning. He is not doing the Olympics this year, so he must just be taking a vacation after the Super Bowl.
Taking a vacation. Friday, February 16th, so a week from this Friday, Dan Patrick. Is that President's Day weekend?
Yes, it is.
Something?
Yeah, I believe we have Monday off.
Yeah, so he must be just taking a long weekend.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so they've asked us to host. We're going to host. We're going to book it like it's a national show. We're going to do a national show, and I will be on for 6 hours that day, and I'll be happy about it. I'll be getting up early that day. We all will. Getting up early. Droz, you coming down here?
Sure, I'll be here.
Come on down. Alabama Adriana, you coming on down here?
Do I have to?
And also, did I hear this correctly, that I was talking about there being an extra pair of shoes in the gym yesterday on the floor. Did you also go to the gym yesterday and have a footwear issue?
I don't know. I can't remember what day it was, but I couldn't use that pair of shoes because I forgot to bring mine. I was wearing combat boots, and I opened my gym bag, and there was no tennis shoes in there. So I had some things, they're called studio shoes by Adidas, and they're kind of like, they're pretty much like yoga shoes, and I use them in the studio, but I've never used them on the floor before.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an interesting experience to be walking around basically barefoot. I mean, it covers your foot, but your toes are all exposed.
You gotta watch out. You don't want to drop weights on those.
I was thinking more of like the bacterial side of things, I definitely went home and scrubbed my feet. Don't worry.
There's a guy who works out downtown at the 24-hour fitness who works out barefoot.
I just think that that's a little odd. I don't know.
He's groovy. He's hippie. Yeah. He's hippie. He's all bearded up. He looks like he should be in downtown Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, it really didn't feel too bad. I actually kind of liked it, but it was like the sharing of the gym floor, how often do they clean it? Like, the machines, how often do they clean them? You know, it was just kind of that to me.
Did anybody say anything to you? Did they go, hey, nice ballet shoes, or what did they?
No one said anything. I asked the guy at the front desk placed if that would be okay, and he said he wouldn't say anything, so whatever.
He probably would say something if it was me.
I don't know, maybe.
He probably would. He'd look down at my feet and be like, dude, take those somewhere else. The guy in the downtown gym, I think he does it not because he forgot his shoes, but I think he likes the feel. Because, like, there is a connection that you have when you're lifting weights. Like, when you hold, I like the grip of the, like, some things that I grab, like the weights, the barbells or the dumbbells, I like how they feel in my hand. So I have to think that the dude who's doing it downtown, he didn't forget his shoes. He must like the way the floor feels because he squats, which I think is insane. He's got like the barbell with 45-pound plates on the sides, and he's doing like legitimate squats. Like if he drops that thing on his piggies, he's in trouble. And then he just walks around there and he's barefooted. And I'm like, man, it's like he should be sitting Indian style somewhere in the corner, you know?
Yeah.
Crisscross, applesauce.
Yeah. Well, they make these shoes. They're called Five Fingers. And they have the toes all like individual.
Yeah.
It's basically to simulate like you running barefoot.
Yeah, I have had a pair of those.
Yeah, I've never worn them, but I'm thinking it would be basically the same thing that I had just without the toes.
Rob Gronkowski in the news today. What's with the 911 call in Gronk? Anytime we get a 911 call, I like playing it because I just like the sound of it. But apparently Gronk's house got robbed. Here's the call.
911 line decoded. Where is your emergency?
Hello, this isn't an emergency. This is Rob Gronkowski calling. And while I was gone, my whole house got robbed while on the Super Bowl trip.
Just wanted to confirm the reports that Mr. Gronkowski was the victim of a residential burglary last night. Whether you're Rob Gronkowski or Bill Baker, being a victim of a residential property crime like that is unpleasant. So out of respect for Mr. Gronkowski's privacy, and because this is an active and dynamic criminal investigation, we're not going to be releasing any information right now about what was stolen or whether any suspects exist. It was while he was away. We're not going to release the details of what we know about the time and day that the incident occurred. There were items stolen, which is routine as a part of a residential burglary, but again, we're not going to release the nature of the item stolen at this point.
According to the police report, they broke into the house through a window. They raided several rooms. His bedroom door had a lock on it. So whatever was in Gronk's, safe room, they didn't get. But he has two roommates, and both of their rooms were raided. And look, here's the bottom line with this kind of stuff. It's why we have like high tech security at our house in part. And we have cameras and we have a security system and monitored and at different times because of different threats. Like, if I'm not saying Rob Gronkowski and myself are the same, but it's an unsettling feeling when you know, like, you're on radio at a certain time and that, or if I tell people, hey, I'm going on vacation, I say that on air. That I'm on vacation. So it's why, like, we've hired security in prior years and said, hey, we're on vacation. Can you patrol here and can you be there? And we have the video cameras and the security system and all that stuff in place because I'm going to guess Rob Gronkowski didn't have a security system or cameras. Because if he did, he'd have known he was getting robbed. Hell, I know when the 11-year-old gets home from school. I'll be on the radio and boom, it's on my phone right in front of me. And it's probably more information. Like, I'm building a little project in my garage right now. And my wife over the weekend, I told her, I said, you get a real kick if you check out the cameras because you're going to be watching me construct this thing in futility. And she's like, yeah, I know what you're up to in there. It's an unsettling feeling. But at the same time, if you are anybody, like, I just think regular people, like, I talk about security all the time. I think that for what security costs you today, the peace of mind that you have and the idea that you can protect your home is invaluable. My brother, they had a home burglary at his house in California. And it was incredibly unsettling because their kid, their now 14-year-old, comes home from school before they do. And so they had this feeling like, okay, what if the kid had come home and encountered the burglary in progress? So they went high tech with all their security. We do it. I mean, I can look in right now. I can see all the house. I can see the surrounding neighborhood. I can see the driveway. I know which doors open and close. I know who's there and what. And anybody's coming and going. There's a package on the doorstep. I know when it's delivered. And you might think, hey, that's a lot of information. I don't know if I want to have that or what. I look at this Gronk thing. correct me if I'm wrong, in today's world, like, does that surprise you that Gronk didn't realize his house was burglarized until he got home? Like, to me, that's like, shouldn't he have known that something was not right there? They raided several rooms, and, like, I think there are a lot of people listening to the show who probably go, you know what? I would have known the minute that window was broken. Or I would have known even before then. I would have got an alert. If somebody approached the house, I would have got an alert. So I think good security is good to have, and I didn't mean for this to turn into a security segment. And I'm not shilling for security here. I'm telling you, like, if you're Rob Gronkowski, why in the hell would you not have that? And these guys are such targets with the wealth that they have and the fact that everybody in America could turn on the TV and know that Rob Gronkowski was not home during the Super Bowl. I think that's a tremendous disadvantage for him to be at. Jonathan Smith is Oregon State's head football coach. He's going to be joining us coming up. The Beavers coach is going to tell us who is a Beavers player and how did he do today on National Signing Day. Leave it here. This is not Jonathan Smith's first National Signing Day. It's just his first National Signing Day as the Beavers head coach. Beavers coach Jonathan Smith joining us now. What did you do as a player on National Signing Day?
I don't even remember because I wasn't signing. I couldn't tell you. We came up on a recruiting visit, or I did, the weekend before the signing day up here at Oregon State. But I can't even tell you what I was doing on that Wednesday.
Does that give you – do you look back a little bit as a coach now and think, who am I missing?
No. Yeah, you just think about the kids you signed and where we're headed, and you're always looking forward.
What today were you most excited about? Or when you look at the class, what do you see?
I see a bunch of kids that know the place well because they were able to visit. They know the coaches they were going to be dealing with, and they were really confident in the direction Oregon State's going to go. I see a bunch of kids that can fit multiple roles, really, like just from, you know, some of their athleticism and length. They could start on the defensive side, get to the offensive side, and vice versa. You know, I like the offensive skill sets. The guys that be able to catch the ball and do some things when the ball's in their hands slash run the ball. So I think it's well-balanced, too. You know, we wanted to get some help at almost each position, and we were able to do that. So there's just a lot of good things as I look at it.
Was it difficult for you coming through the door? Because I think a first-year coach, you kind of have to assess what you have. How do you do that without coaching a game? Do you look at film? Do you talk to people? How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely watch some film. You definitely look at the roster and their ages, you know, and where we're going to need position help in a year or 2 years if you've got a bunch of juniors or seniors. Definitely, you know, played against these guys the last 4 years, so I had somewhat of an idea of kind of the identity of some of the players and things. And so, you know, and then getting around them and meeting them and seeing them in the weight room a little bit, and you get a feel for it that way. But obviously we'll have a greater grasp of what we have after spring practice and after our first fall.
What did you see as the most pressing needs as you looked around and entered recruiting?
You know, I think big picture, we were trying to get a little taller, a little longer, rangier type athletes, and we were able to get that done this month. That was something that stood out to us that could help us, especially with the schemes we want to run on both sides of the ball, really. We wanted to get some more length, and, you know, we've got a bunch of guys that fit that.
Do you come through the door and measure your guys? Is that something you guys track?
Oh, I mean, you get a feel for them. You stand there next to them, and you do. You get a little height and weight when they come up on a weekend and things. I mean, it's pretty obvious. So if he's looking me in the eyes, he ain't that tall.
And that's what I'm getting at, too, because you did it, and the narrative of your story is, here's this guy that nobody saw coming and took Oregon State to its greatest football season maybe ever. And if that guy can do it, he can show other people how to do it. So how does that guy who is 5'9 or 5'10 get about saying, hey, length matters, height matters, when you made it not matter?
Right. I mean, they do come in all shapes and sizes. And, you know, it's kind of position specific, the scheme you're trying to run. You know, I think quarterback is a little unique in regards to, you know, all those guys. Some are 6'5", some are 5'10", and there's a bunch of good players that are those different sizes. I just think as a holistic approach, as you looked at our roster and what we want to run, especially on defense and some on offense, we wanted to get a little taller, a little length, you know, length to us. And so that was a point of emphasis.
You know, and I'm not trying to pick on you there. I just thought it was really – it's an interesting twist to me that – you know, you get a lot of guys who, you know, you look at Jerry Rice and, you know, what made Jerry Rice the greatest receiver of all time? It wasn't all physical, was it?
No. And that's so much of this part is that, you know, you want to find guys that love football, that want to improve, that can work hard, that has some instincts of the game. And some of that stuff is not that easy to identify, you know. When you're recruiting these kids and, you know, they're all about the recruiting part more than they're truly about playing the game and trying to uncover those rocks to find out exactly the type of kid you're getting and making sure it's clearly communicated that that's the message coming from here, that, you know, it's about developing in constant state of improvement and the love of football, because you can spend a lot of time doing it. And that's some of the magic that goes into, you know, evaluating and recruiting.
We're talking to Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State football coach. How important is it to have mom and dad on board with where the kid's going?
Yeah, I think it's important, man. I really do. You know, we really try to push for the parents to be able to come on the recruiting visit, because, you know, these kids come up and they've got some interest in particular things, whether it's, you know, the gear or the school or the campus itself. But I think the parent perspective is one that can really give some good advice to the recruit. And so we're all about getting to know those people and really beginning a relationship, because hopefully this thing's lasting for 4 or 5 years and getting off on the right foot.
Can you talk about a couple of the kids? Because I know until today you can't really do that. For Beaver fans who are listening and want to get excited about National Signing Day, who do you start the conversation with?
Well, I think, you know, Matthew Togo is a kid that is from Southern California that is really athletic, fits that mold of being a little bit longer. Really, he's a good player on both sides of the ball. He came up on a visit this January with his dad. And, you know, I think he's a guy for sure to get excited about as a group. You know, I think a lot of people like to talk about the quarterback. So we, you know, signed Jack Coletto, really played high school ball at Campus Washington, had a phenomenal senior year, and then went the junior college route for a season because he wanted to play in the Pac-12. And, you know, the opportunity to come up and do that here was exciting for him. Plus, it's closer to home. Plus, he's got 3 years to play. And that's one thing I did want our approach to be with this class, is get majority of guys that were the high school age or had three years to play, so we can continue to develop. And that's what I think we can make our hay, especially with this staff I was able to surround myself with, is we can develop and coach these guys up. And I'm confident that they're here over a longer period of time. They're going to continue to get better and better and be, you know, able to win games.
What's your stance on the community college kids? I see some coaches who will say, look, it's a stopgap. Other guys will say, look, I'm not going to discount a player just because he went the JC route. Where do you stand?
Yeah, well, we're definitely not discounting them. Just from my history of playing with guys that went the junior college route, you know, there are some good players that come out of there. And there's, you know, there's reasons they're there, and sometimes they're not always that good. But a lot of times it's just, you know, whatever. He was overlooked. He was a late developer. You know, school, he needed to get that right. And so I'm into players that have to work. And if they're about football and school's important, those guys can come from the junior college level.
We're talking to Jonathan Smith, Oregon State's football coach. His first National Signing Day is the Beavers coach today. Who is the typical Oregon State kid? Because we used to say that kid was lunch bucket kid, overachiever, like you would be the poster boy. Is it still you?
You know, I think they come in all shapes and sizes. I think the guys we're looking for sure, love football and are good players that love football and want to be around it and enjoy, you know, playing the game and working at the game and practicing. Those guys, I think the guys we're looking for sure understand the importance of school. You know, I'm not looking for a bunch of guys that have a 4.0 GPA, but I'm looking for guys that realize the importance of getting that degree and are really to work to do it and go to class and then have some classes and really gain some knowledge and learn and grow. And then at the end of the day, I mean, you're looking for guys that are good dudes, that are, you know, good guys to be around. You spend so much time
at practicing and meetings and all of this year-round football is now. You want to be around a bunch of good dudes that are, you know, enjoyable to be around.
I love that. A bunch of good dudes. Can we make that the slogan now? Informal?
I think that's a reality, right? I mean,
yeah.
All the time. I mean, come on. Let's just be around some guys that are good to be around.
It's funny, too, because I can tell you're having a good time with it, and you like that camaraderie with the players. Does the rest of this, sometimes how seriously everybody takes it, feel silly to you at times?
You know, silly. I mean, I guess I just do have a different perspective on it, and I get it. And then there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and people want to know, and that's great. You know, you want that. But I do think on the ground floor here, the day-to-day basis of it, I think still the most important stuff is the relationships you're having with these players and coaches, and obviously the way we're practicing and preparing and improving each and every day.
And it's got to be fun, though, doesn't it? I mean, at the end of it, this is why you got in it.
Oh, yeah. This thing is fun. You can let it not be if you focus too much on, you know, outside distractions and all the attention that comes with it. It can be really good and really bad. I think the thing is that's fun is being around good people and really working hard, everyone on the same page, doing it together. Because that's why football's the greatest game out there. I mean, 105-some-odd guys all getting on the same page and working as one. It's unique that way, and it's a bunch of fun when you get it right.
Jonathan Smith with us, Oregon State football coach. Before I cut you loose, all right, so all this effort goes into signing these guys. Signing day comes. Does your family get you back tomorrow, or do you turn to 2019, or what happens?
Oh, you know, you always turn into 2019. Shoot, we were working on 2019 even throughout this month as well, but we'll be able to catch up with the family for sure more now just because I'm not traveling, right? I mean, you're in Corvallis now for the next couple of months, and then spring ball starts, and so that is the top priority now, is kind of get reacclimated with those guys.
So if I have this right, you're looking for a bunch of good, tall dudes.
Yeah, they love football, and school's important, man, that, you know, you enjoy being around. That's right.
I love it.
Not all tall, but no. You know, we need some athletics in different spots, but
right.
For this class, we needed to get longer.
Yeah, like a 6'7" kicker. You know, then you know you've arrived.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, congratulations on your first class. I know everybody's really eager to see you coach games. I'm eager to see what you do in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years there.
Well, I appreciate it, John.
All right. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach. He's got his signing class. He wants good dudes. I like him. You like Jonathan Smith? You like what you hear? And you're saying, I know what you're saying. You're going, yeah, you like him. You like him for now. Wait till he coaches some games. I like that he went out and addressed some needs today. I like that he finished strong. I like that he seems to have a handle on what kind of player he wants to sign. And he wants good dudes in this program. Is that the mantra that the marketing department at Oregon State should grab? A bunch of good dudes? Have that be your football program? I don't know. Give me a marketing slogan for Oregon State football. If you're a Duck fan, forget win the day. Forget do something. What should Mario Cristobal's slogan be for Oregon football? 503-417-7575. You help the marketing department next. Make sure you're subscribed to the Bald Faced Truth radio show via SoundCloud and or iTunes. If you're a podcaster or somebody who likes to listen to podcasts or wants the great interviews that we have, including Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State football coach who was just on, you can get all of those things. You can get all of those things on SoundCloud and iTunes. Mike Leach really upset today. Just saw this on Twitter. Mike Leach, his offensive line coach, left for Texas Tech. It's kind of a double-edged sword there. Your coach is leaving, but at the standpoint that you look at it is he's leaving for the university that you hate. He said, I wish Clay the best, but he's got to sort that out himself. From his standpoint, he's going home, but they're on thin ice out there, and if you fall through the ice, you're leaving home pretty quick. That's Clay McGuire, his offensive line coach at Washington State, leaving for Texas Tech. By the way, a Philadelphia Eagles fan is in trouble. Apparently stole a seat from the stadium in Minneapolis after the football game. Philadelphia Eagles fan, if you want to stop being classified as the worst kind of sports fan in America, you have to stop doing things. You can't be punching out horses and going, we're not that bad. Throwing beers, full beers in cans at old people and going, we're not that bad, not all of us. But an Eagles fan apparently stole a seat from inside Minneapolis Stadium after the Super Bowl. U.S. Bank Stadium said today that it does not plan to take further action against the fan. It just wants the fan to pay for the seat. The seat has been replaced. Video of the man carrying a purple seat generated 190,000 views on Facebook. Then a traveler also snapped a photo of the guy at the Minneapolis St. Paul airport with the seat strapped to his carry-on suitcase. Can't get away with that in 2018, buddy. The fan, by the way, only had to pay, guess how much, to replace the seat. If you know the answer, don't answer. But if you don't know the answer, take a guess. Gliss, Droz, Alabama, Adriana, a stadium seat, what does it cost to replace?
I'm going to say $35.
Wow. This is the Price is Right. What do you say, Alabama, Adriana?
$15.
Are you guys kidding me?
This is, I was going to go like $250.
Yeah. I would have said like at $900.
It's just plastic.
The whole seat. The guy took the whole seat out of the thing. Droz, what did he pay?
I have no idea. I said $250. That's my guess.
The cost to replace the seat, including labor, is estimated at $125. The fan was exuberant. He was excited. Is this poor form? Does it get you known as a bad sports fan or a great sports fan that you stole your seat from the Super Bowl? And apparently, on Instagram, the photograph of it has a photograph of the guy with the seat strapped to his bag, and it says, U.S. Bank Stadium, you appear to be missing a seat. The drunk guy next to me has it. Is this bad fan behavior or totally understandable? 503-417-7575. You vandalize the stadium, you steal a seat. Is it totally understandable or is it bad fan behavior? Because to me, this does not fall in the same category as punching out a horse. It doesn't fall in the same category as throwing full beer cans at old people and berating people. It's not punching somebody out at the stadium. If you're vandalizing the stadium, though, that's not good. That's not something I can turn to my kids and go, hey, it's just an excited and exuberant fan who stole the seat. Like, I think if I would have more respect for the guy if he had approached the stadium and said, look, I need to buy that seat. And they said, we can't sell it to you. And him to say, look, I was going to rip it off from the seat, and I didn't want to be in a scenario where I stole a seat from you. Is it bad fan behavior to vandalize in the stadium and take a seat? I have a seat from old PGE Park here in Portland. Somebody gave it to me. Joe Becker, the longtime sports broadcaster at KGW, said, hey, I've got this old seat. It's from PGE Park, you know, and I have this seat. I don't know what to do with it. But it's not like I would love to have a seat from old Candlestick Park that was a real seat. You tell me, is that bad fan behavior? Is that as bad as punching somebody out? Is it as bad as getting in a fight in the bathroom at an NFL game that a guy ripped off a seat? It's stealing, right? Stealing's wrong, we tell kids. But do we dismiss it because it's an exuberant sports fan and we all understand? What's the difference between stealing a seat and stealing Tom Brady's jersey? You weigh in. You have the floor now at 503-417-7575. Charlie's in Vancouver. Charlie, where does this rate for you?
I think that's an awesome one. My buddy just bought a piece of PGE Park, whatever it was, when the Timbers won the championship, and because they got new turf after that. And he's got that in his apartment, and that's a great story to tell. That's nothing like that one, though.
I think it's great if he got caught, because then he has to pay retribution. But I hope he gets to keep the seat.
Yeah, he's keeping it.
If you're a Philly fan and you've been dying for that Super Bowl championship forever, you can't brag about, well, yeah, I punched out a horse because we won the championship, or that, the other one you were talking about. But you sure can say, hey, my seat, I paid $1,800 for it, and guess what? I'm keeping it forever, so that every time somebody comes into my house, I can tell them all about it and prove that I was there. I think it's awesome.
The seat from the Super Bowl. He also checked it at Coat Check. So he stole it from the stadium. He checked it at a Coat Check, then picked it back up, then took it through security at the airport, strapped to his bag. $125, he'd pay that in a heartbeat. I think if you're at Minneapolis Stadium, all you have to do is advertise to Eagles fans, hey, for $300, we'll sell you a seat from the Super Bowl. They'll replace them at $125 apiece. They'll make money on this. They'll sell 50,000 of those seats. I hate to break the news, but there's some money in this for Minneapolis Stadium. Ben's in Beaverton. Ben, how big a fence is this?
Well, I think on this one, we're going to have to cut it right down the middle and say 49-49, 49 bad fan behavior, 49 totally understand it. And I think he gets 2 points on the pro side for each cojone that it took to pull it off.
If your kid came home with a stadium seat, would you punish him, or would you go, that's understandable, don't let it happen again?
High five him and tell him not to ever do it again.
Yeah.
You ever see a major league when Willie Mays Hayes makes the basket catch and then he comes off, the manager Lou shakes his hand and gives him a few choice words?
Yes.
Nice catch, Hayes. That's more or less my feeling on it. Good job. Don't ever do it again.
Yeah, you don't want, as a parent, put yourself in the shoes. And parents, I want to hear from you. Let's say your kid goes to a sporting event, a Ducks game, a Beavers game, a Blazers game. It's a championship game, and your kid comes home with a stadium seat. And you know your kids ripped that seat off. Do you do what you do when they're two and they steal a pack of gum from the store, march them back in there to the manager? Or do you go, oh, man, this isn't good. You shouldn't have done that, but I understand it. I don't know, because as a parent, I want to paint in black and white. Gliss, your kids, when they grow up, let's say they're early 20s, they come home with a stadium seat that they have clearly ripped off from a stadium. Are they in trouble, or are you high-fiving them?
Probably a little bit of both. I've actually stolen something from a stadium.
Oh, do tell.
When I was younger. Yeah, when I went to the All-Star game in Oakland in 2000, the guy I went with, family friend, we stayed about an hour and a half. Actually, I think we probably got kicked out about 10 times. Like, you know, move towards the exits, the game's over. And there was a TV guy. It was still NBC at the time. He was taking down a bunch of wires, and there was a huge banner, you know, kind of the fanfare that's all around the stadium. And they were just held up by Velcro, and this thing was probably about 50 feet long. And we looked over at the guy. We were like, hey, do you know what they're going to do with this? And he's like, I didn't see anything. So we just took it, rolled it up, and it was hanging in my garage in high school.
He kind of gave you permission for that.
Well, he didn't have any authority over the issue, but he just kind of said he wasn't going to stop us.
Tell me if you've stolen anything from a sports stadium. I want to know what you've taken. 503-417-7575. Something from a stadium. Fan in Philadelphia stole a seat stadium from the Minneapolis Stadium, side of the Super Bowl. Understandable or not, tell me what you've... It's confession time. Tell me what you've taken from a stadium or a sports venue. 503-417-7575. We'll take your phone calls. John's Waterproofing, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention them today. Strong sponsor of the BFT radio program and a strong supporter of the community. John's Waterproofing can help your basement, your crawl space. If you've got standing water, mold, mildew, a funny, musty smell, any kind of problem with your foundation, erosion, John's Waterproofing should be your call. They'll give you a free consultation like they did for us. We had them look at a rental house. We had them look at our primary residence. They told us with the primary residence, hey, you don't need to do anything. Everything's great. They told us with the rental house, yeah, there's some standing water there. Would be a concern. Here's a way we could probably approach this. They gave us multiple solutions, which we talked through with them. And what I gathered in the process with John's Waterproofing is that they are experts. They've been doing this a long time. You can jimmy jack around with a company that is just going to charge you a bunch of money to do things you don't need to do, or you can go with John's Waterproofing. I would go with John's Waterproofing. In fact, I did. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. I want to know what you've taken, what you've stolen. It's time to confess. Mark is in Eugene. Mark, what have you done?
John, Mark's my pseudonym since I don't want to be a thief on the air. But for about the past, well, I've given it up now, but the past 10 years, my friends and I have snuck into almost every single Duck football game all over the West Coast. We snuck into Jerry World. We snuck into Corvallis. We've been to the Rose Bowl and haven't taken anything out, but have taken in the games for free.
Wow. How did you get into Jerry World?
Oh, it was interesting, but same as at Austin. Just walk by the hired staff.
Walk right in like you belong there.
Exactly.
All right, there's Mark and Eugene. He's been a freeloader for years, and he's coming clean. I bet he sleeps better tonight because of it. If that's what this show can do for you, bless you. Go with God. Brad's in Milwaukee. Brad, what have you done?
Hey, John. Not too proud of this, but about 35, 40 years ago, you could just walk into the Coliseum day of the game, early in the day, the Blazers would practice, and then the visiting team was usually there, and they would usually practice, at least run through some plays. And you could just walk in there, and as long as you just kept your mouth shut and kind of just stayed small, you could watch the practices. Not only that, if you took a basketball after the practices, you could shoot around. The only people that were in there, there wasn't any really security. The only people that were in there at the time would be like the clean people. And I think just figured if you're somebody's out here shooting around that they belong here, because nobody would be crazy enough to be doing this if they didn't.
I love that.
We would go down there all the time, and one day, this was back in 80, the Philadelphia 76ers were in town, and we were watching them practice like usual. Well, Clint Richardson took his warm-up jacket off and just tossed it on the floor pretty close to where we were standing, and me and my friend looked at each other, and I think we were thinking the same thing, and one of us decided to pick it up and take it, and we bolted. And we took off out of there. We got out to the parking lot, and we stopped running. And looked in the pocket, one of the pockets, and there was a diamond ring in the pocket of this warm-up. And that really freaked us out. Like, all we wanted to do was just get a warm-up. And here's this, who knows how expensive this diamond ring was. We're like 16 years old. So it just freaked us out really bad, and what we ended up doing was we ended up not even keeping the coat. We put the ring back in the pocket, we took the coat, and we UPS'd it with a little note to the Blazer office and hoping that it caught up with Mr. Richardson at some point.
Did you ever figure out, oh, he needed to get that off his chest? I wondered if he ever figured out if it got back to Richardson. Jeff's in Selwood. Jeff, clear your conscience.
Hey, John. I can't say I've ever snuck into a game, and every memorabilia I've ever gotten was luckily given to me and not stolen. But I was lucky enough in the 2012 Oregon Rose Bowl game against Wisconsin to have a post-game field pass for that game. So I went down and acted like all the players did and did confetti angels in the confetti and had to pocket some of that when I was heading back up the stairs. So I still have a bag, like a Ziploc baggie full of the confetti from Oregon's first Rose Bowl win in a long time. So not sure what I want to do with that, but it's going to hopefully go into a glass case somewhere at some point.
Yeah, that's real memorabilia, and it's not – I don't classify that as stealing, taking confetti. Because I feel it kind of like confetti, once you shoot it off, it's like garbage. You put it out at the curb. It's anybody's. It's fair game. The diamond ring that the guy took, that's different. Also, somebody on Twitter has raised a point saying, is it stealing if you pay for, because you're paying for a seat when you buy a ticket? Didn't the guy pay for the seat as part of his Super Bowl ticket? I don't think so. They'll give you a seat cushion, but not the seat. Chris is in Tigard. Chris, clear conscience.
What's up, John? Hey, this would have been 6-7 years ago, and if you think back, there was a day at Pebble Beach that Tiger and Phil were paired up on the final day. Phil ended up whooping him pretty good. And I was down there. I used to work for a big company here in town, the Swoosh, in their golf department, and Tiger and Phil were the final group, and when they got down on 15, thousands and thousands of people kept, they were all following them, and I just walked over and grabbed the flag, stuck it in my back pocket, ended up going in and having a beer with Nick Saldo in the pub room afterwards at Pebble, and got Saldo to sign it for me.
I love that. You're, Faldo, your accomplice in this.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. You're sitting there having a beer and chatting it up, watching Phil and Amy and their kids on the 18th green, and all the while I'm laughing. Nobody paid any mind to it.
Yeah.
Once they finished the hole, there were no golfers going through after.
Yeah. Is it okay? I mean, some of this stuff, I get it, but I'm still caught up on the 16-year-old kids who took the jacket, the warm-up jacket. And see, the thing that I think is different than that call than maybe people who are grown-ups who are stealing stuff is when you're 16 years old, it's not that I expect you to have less maturity and judgment. It's just that I understand when you don't. I'm not all right with stealing. I'm not okay with, like, if the 15-year-old came home with something she stole, I would be disappointed. The Super Bowl seat, I don't know why, because maybe it's because it's the Philadelphia Eagles that are in it, and maybe it's because the price of a Super Bowl ticket can be thousands of dollars, that I kind of go, I get why that guy stole the seat. Am I out in left field here? I'm glad that some of the callers have gotten things off their chest. I especially felt with two of them in particular that they needed to tell somebody about it. You know? They needed that. They needed to get it off their chest. Gliss, you need to tell our listeners about something that's going on that they are uniquely qualified to win.
Yes, I do. It's pretty important. Journey and Def Leppard are going to be playing at the Moda Center on September 28th. And if you go to the BFT contest page and enter the word speaker, S-P-E-A-K-E-R, speaker, then you'll have a chance to win tickets.
That's all you have to do?
That's all you have to do.
So 1029, or is it, what is it, 1029thegame.com?
It's 1029thegame.com. Go to the contest page, and there's a John Canzano area, and that's where you go.
And enter the word speaker.
Speaker.
If you can't spell speaker, you're not going to get the prize. But if you can spell speaker, you're entered for a chance to win the tickets to Def Leppard and Journey. That's going to be a pretty sweet concert.
I've actually seen them play together, and it's a great show.
Is it going to be a bunch of old people at that show? Probably.
Yeah, there's a lot of older women, actually, but it's a good show.
Let's figure something out. Ask Alabama Adriana, who's down there next to you, to name one Def Leppard song. One Def Leppard song.
I know that
song.
The drummer only has one arm. wait, no, okay. Pour Some Sugar on Me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. The drummer only has one arm. That's why you come to this radio show. There you go. Got it right. She got Pour Some Sugar on Me. All right. Make sure you're subscribed on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth podcast. You get lots of content there. BFT, not here for a long time, just a good time.